Listener production.
Oh, how I've been waiting for this for a while. Take it away, my dulcet-toned Adonis.
It is so good to be back. Hello, Gistners, and welcome back for another overdue episode of Just the Gist, a weekly-ish podcast that gives you just the gist of what you need to know about a topic we think you'll find interesting enough to bring up at a dinner party. Rosie Waterland, we're back.
Yay!
Hooray.
Here we are, back together across screens.
Yes, closer on the continent than we've been for a really long time. We're in the same state.
We are in the same state, finally. Well, you're sort of back from your thing in that you are now in Byron Bay and not in the middle of the northmost point jungle of the country.
That's right.
And your tan is looking less cultural appropriation and more just had a day at the beach.
I don't know how to take that. Okay.
So first of all, I will say I owe you an apology, Jacob, because that first week your computer shat itself. So we did that emergency republish of an episode and Caleb stepped in for breaking news, which did you like that? Did you listen to it?
I really, really did. I've been practicing Caleb's voice for the last week.
Try it, go.
Oh, someone's got to be the adult in this relationship, Rosanna.
That is so it.
Negative gearing. Oh, God.
He is just, I mean, people really loved it. I think because people don't believe me when I say that he is like a 60-year-old man in a young body. Like, he is truly a young fogey. And when people heard it, they were like, oh, my God, you weren't exaggerating.
And I think that I'd become immune to it, having spent a fair bit of time with him and with you in Sydney. So I just sort of got used to it. And then not speaking to him for a while and hearing him on the podcast like that, it just stood out in such stark contrast. And it was funny as well, because the other day I was reading some article that was saying people who are in their 40s and 50s really need to make sure that they've got a two-way mentoring relationship with someone who's in their early 20s to help them stay current. Otherwise, they're just going to sort of become the next generation of boomers who get completely left behind and confused by the way that the world operates. So you really need to find someone who's young to keep you up to date. And I was like, who do I know in their 20s? Caleb's not going to be...
It's the other way around. Well, we've actually, it's so funny because we actually started dating, met each other and started dating because we were thinking about starting a podcast together, because we found out just at the time friendship so funny and weird in that, you know, I was older, he was younger, but I seem younger and he seems older, and I'm obsessed with like pop culture and nonsense and he's obsessed with politics and serious stuff. I always say to people, I'm like, bleh, and he's like, And so we had this idea, like, maybe we should do a podcast where we just, like, I don't know, give our different sort of interpretations of the news that week, news that I think's important, news that he thinks is important, and kind of get each other's perspectives on what's going on in the world. And so I was in Adelaide for work and we met up to talk about the podcast, and then we just ended up making out instead. And the rest is history. We never did the podcast, but now I live in Adelaide. part-time.
Are you hinting that this might finally happen?
The podcast? Oh, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's sort of something we're always like, oh, yeah, we should do that. That's a funny idea. We should do that. And then we just kind of, we're both so busy that we just don't ever do it. So I suppose if you want that podcast, please let us know. I mean, people did love hearing us together last week. So maybe I'll boot you like Emily and have him on here.
Oh, I saw that coming, yes.
I posted a photo with Emily, our mysterious third host, on the weekend, and people were excited to finally see what she looks like.
Love that girl. Yep. All right. Well, I've been paid already, so fine.
Yeah. I did bring that up to say that my apology is because your computer shut itself, so Caleb stepped in, we did that. And then the next week we couldn't record and everyone just assumed it's because you were in the jungle, and we kept getting all these messages going, oh, can Caleb, oh shit, it's happening already. Can Jacob get out? Can Jacob get out of the jungle and fix his computer? We really need an episode. And you copped the brunt of people being annoyed that there wasn't an episode for the second week in a row. But it was me. I was feeling very anxious last week. I've been struggling a little bit extra with my anxiety for probably about the last month. And it just got to a point where I was, I think because my anxiety in the past has reached like quite intense places, I tend to overcorrect. So the second I start feeling more anxious than usual and I'm not sure what's going on, I'm like, oh shit, I think I need to go to hospital. Maybe I need to change my medication. I need to do something serious. I need to do, and so I started freaking out. But I think, you know, after talking to the people I talked to and everything, what I really just needed was a week off. A week to like go home and see my family in Sydney. So that's why I'm recording from Sydney now, because I'm here visiting the kids and stuff. And I just needed to, you know, step back for a little bit. So I left you in charge of the Just the Gist Instagram, which you managed quite well, and the emails, etc. And I just stepped back from all of it and looked at all the comments coming in of people blaming you for there not being an episode. And I was like, ha ha. It was me. So I do very much apologize. There was an episode last week, but, you know, I think it's important to be honest about this stuff. I have anxiety and sometimes it kicks in a way that means I need to step back a little. And that's what I did last week. And I know that everybody who listens is lovely and supportive and understanding of that stuff. So, yeah, that's it. You got to take care of yourself. Put yourself first.
Very true. Good on you for sharing that. There's definitely no shame in it.
I'm so brave. I'm so hashtag brave. Yeah, so that's what happened. And it was lovely to come to Sydney. It was the cutest thing because I haven't seen my niece and nephew in so long. And we decided to surprise them. So we didn't tell them I was coming. And I got to the house.
Oh.
And Aya saw me walk down the hallway. And she ran up to me and I crouched down to give her a hug. And she put both her hands on my cheeks and looked into my eyes like she couldn't believe what she was seeing. And she went, Wolsey.
Oh.
It was so cute. And Muhammad was upstairs playing PlayStation, so he didn't come down for like a minute. And I was like, why isn't he coming? Like, get F, Muhammad. I'm here, man. Like, how dare you? And then all of a sudden I heard him go, Rosie! And he came running down the stairs and he was like, I heard voices. I just thought it was one of my mum's lame friends. And then he like gave me this big hug. And it was really nice. Had a sleepover. We had lots of fun. I got sick of being there after like an hour because they're all just chaotic and it's mayhem and it's crazy. Mm. No, but really, I love them. And then we went to the zoo. We went to the zoo on Sunday, which was great. And I bought Aya a $40 stuffed tiger. So she better like it.
Get her to watch Tiger King, then she'll fall in love with it.
Yeah, so that was, you know, I think seeing the fam bam was, you know, I think for me it was like before you make any drastic steps, before you think you need to go to hospital, before, like, do simple things. Like, go see your family. Like, take some time off. And I'm just already feeling a million zillion percent better. So
so good to hear.
I know. And then I'll be back to Adelaide on Thursday. So I'll be back in Adelaide by the time you guys are listening with Caleb. I'll be in Adelaide. Wait, I can't even do it now. Wait. He says things like people say he talks like Christopher Palm because he does that weird.
Yeah, I saw all those comments coming through.
Sounds out weird.
Oh, I meant to Google who Christopher Pine is. I still have no idea. Was he in Star Wars?
Yes. Okay. He was in Star Wars. Wait, that's his name, right? Christopher Pine? Yeah. And the other guy's Chris Pine, the movie star.
Oh. Oh, okay.
And isn't he the one who accidentally posted a photo of his penis recently?
That was Chris Evans.
Oh, that was Chris Evans. Oh, that's right. There's about 8,000 movie stars called Chris.
That's right.
So, with all of that out of the way, are you ready for breaking news? Breaking news! I got the scoop. I see extra. Read all about it. Breaking news! huge breaking news. Anna Delvey, which is, by coincidence, the episode we dropped last week.
Yeah.
All of a sudden on her Instagram, because I follow her on Instagram and I highly suggest everybody does, it's the Anna Delvey on Instagram. She posted the clip from Legally Blonde where Elle Woods finds out she got a high enough score to get into law school and all the girls put her on their shoulders and their streamers and cheering. So Anna Delvey just posted that and underneath wrote, parole. Mm. And so then I immediately Googled it. She has got parole.
Oh, she has. Yeah.
So she, after everything, and, you know, if you didn't listen last week when we republished, you really should. After everything she did, she got sentenced to 4 to 12 years in prison in April last year.
Mm-hmm.
And a few days ago, she went to a parole hearing. Parole got approved and she's going to be released in February 2021.
Oh, wow.
So served less than a year.
Wow.
And her lawyer said, she has paid her debt to society and I hope society repays the favor. And I sort of read that and I was like, well, they don't need to repay anything because she stole from society. So she was repaying them, I think.
That's right. That statement makes absolutely no sense.
Apparently, when she gets released, she'll be deported immediately to Germany.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. But she's saying that she wants to go live in London because she's allowed to travel in Europe. But with COVID, I mean, who knows? But she wants to go live in London. There's two shows being made about her life right now. I mean, I think she's going to be a big star when she gets out.
She already has such a huge fan base. Yeah. So I found out about this yesterday because someone tagged us in the post. So I looked at it and ventured into the comments and they were all adoring, loving fans, cheering her on. They were all so excited for her, calling her the queen.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel like she's going to turn this into a massive, successful career in some capacity.
It's like we said in the episode, like when she was on trial, her lawyer basically said like, compared her to like a dreamer who just didn't quite make it. Like, yes, she cut some corners, but if she had made it, she would have been really successful. And, you know, compared her to like other people who had gone to New York to make their dreams come true. And so I think that's the narrative she's kind of pushing now. Like,
yep.
I you know, almost did it and maybe I still can. So
it's compelling. It's good viewing.
Dream big, steal handbags. All that. Oh, the other breaking news I have is I don't even know if I want to bring this guy up, but I just think it's funny and I hope this happens to him. You know, John Wayne Bobbitt, episode we did, his wife, you know, I think quite justifiably cut his penis off.
Agreed.
He has been in hospital the last couple of weeks because apparently he had an accident like something like 8 years ago and got an ulcer in his leg that has just never healed. And I just feel like it never healed because he looks like someone who doesn't shower. Like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Anyway. And now they're thinking they might have to amputate his leg because of that. And, like, they showed pictures of his leg on TMZ and it looks pretty bad. So he may have got a penis back, but... You know, it's like karma comes through in the end.
Yeah.
He's going to lose something.
Karma's going to take one of your appendages.
Yes, exactly.
And it's going to be a big one.
Yeah. So I haven't
the penis
seen,
was too small.
Too small. I haven't seen if, I saw that like a week ago. So I haven't seen if he's since had the leg removed, but I'll keep you posted because TMZ is on the case. Mm-hmm. Highbrow journalism, as always, is what I consume. And the last thing is, oh, my gosh, this thing that I watched on Binge, a documentary that actually a few people emailed us about, but I'd already watched it, of course, this documentary called Class Action Park. Have you watched it?
No.
So it's about this theme park that was built back in the 70s and people went to it in the 70s and 80s in New Jersey. And six people died there because it was basically just like a theme park with no rules. It was just like the Wild West. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a Wet and Wild, like so it was a water park. And so there's all these like crazy water slides. But the guy who owned the park and built it and invented it, he just designed the rides himself. So he would be like, oh, I want a water slide just with one giant loop that you go full 360. And so they would build it and then they'd send dummies down it and the dummies would come out like decapitated. And he'd be like, okay, so let's just like adjust it. So they like adjusted a tiny little bit, and then he had all these teenagers working in the park, like 15, 16-year-olds, and he'd pay them $100 to test the rides out, which they did, and a lot of them got really badly injured. Yeah, like really badly injured. And so this park was like the Wild West, but it was also where every single kid who lived in the area went during the summer holidays. Like you just, because this was a time where, you know, your parents were like, okay, see you at dinner. Like, and so you just would go to Action Park and hang out all day in the pools and the water slides and stuff. And they said it was like a rite of passage. Like they were interviewing kids who grew up there. Like if you turned up to school after the holidays with your arm in a sling, it would be like Action Park. And you'd be like, yeah, man. Like it was just no rules, like nothing. And so it's like really like funny and bizarre watching this thing about this theme park that just had no regulation. But then they start getting into the darker side of it, which is that people actually like got severely injured. People broke their backs and eventually six people died because theme parks back then were just like, eh.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
In the one instance?
Like no, spread over time. And the owner of the park had so much money and just refused to settle cases. So people who tried to sue him for their dead relatives and loved ones just ended up getting priced out of court because they couldn't afford to keep trying to. And he sort of had, you know, you watch the documentary and you see, but he had like the theme park made a lot of money for the town. So the town, you know, helped cover things up and keep it open. And, but it was just basically a bunch of teenagers running the park. Like there was no adults really. And then a bunch of teenagers and kids going to the park and just spending all day there getting hurt and drowning and stuff. Like, it's crazy. But it also arises in you this sense of nostalgia for what it was like when we were kids, when things were a lot less wrapped in cotton wool. And you're like, things were better then. And but then you're like, oh, wait, but that's why people died. So maybe they weren't.
And actually, right. Okay.
Actually, it reminded me a lot, of Wonderland, which is now, that was the theme park in Sydney, which has now been torn down, but B, Jamboree, like kind of like just one of those smaller things that someone built themselves and then it just got bigger and bigger. And I mean, I'm sure Jamboree's fine, like sure no one's died there, whatever. But yeah, this place just looked nuts.
You haven't lived as a child, in my opinion, until you've sustained a third degree burn from falling off the giant metal toboggan ride at Jamboree Recreation Park.
Yeah, man.
That's a rite of passage that I think a lot of people sadly have missed out on.
But there is an exact ride like that in Action Park, and that's the one that like two people died on. And that's what the people in this documentary said, the exact same thing. You did not live. It was a rite of passage to go down the Alpine slide. And then all these people are like, it was a rite of passage. You haven't lived. It's an important part of your childhood. And then these parents were like, yeah, our kids died.
Oh, no.
So maybe Jamboree's got better safety regulation. I feel like I want that to be edited out
now.
No. But that's the thing. It's the weirdest documentary because it's funny and nostalgic, but then also you're like, oh, but we shouldn't be nostalgic for a time when they didn't look after children.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a really good documentary. The theme park was called Action Park and the documentary is called Class Action Park because it's about how much they ended up getting sued. And it's on Binge. Okay. I watched it on Binge. It's very, very good. So that's my reco for this week.
Very good.
What about Caleb last week? Reco? What's reco? Yeah. You say recommendation.
Oh, reco for your
smoker. Recommendation. Recommendation. Have you got any recos?
This is quite a sincere one. I really hope everyone watches My Octopus Teacher, which is just a fascinating.
Wait a second. Yeah. I've heard that it's like a weird real-life version of that movie where the woman fell in love with the fish.
That, I have not seen that one, The Shape of Water, but it probably is. I didn't read it that way at all, but one of my friends, when I was talking to her about it, she was like, That was weird. He was in love with that octopus. Like, he crossed a boundary with that octopus, which my brain didn't go there.
That is
all.
Something you never want someone to describe about you, that you crossed a boundary with that octopus. I don't think, if someone is saying that about you, you've made a wrong turn somewhere, I think.
Yeah. Oh, honestly, I think most people will be able to watch it and their brain won't go there. But obviously a few people have sort of drawn that.
So, wow, you brought that up as a sincere, lovely reco.
That, honestly, I want everyone to watch it. It's an incredible story and the footage is absolutely amazing.
Okay.
And also David Attenborough, A Life on Our Planet. I guarantee you will bawl your eyes out when
that's
you watch that.
Yeah, that's on
it's
my list.
It's definitely worth it. Just for God's sake, don't wear any mascara and maybe don't plan anything for after it, because you'll need to just sit in silence for a little while.
God. Okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, I guess that's all. Oh, wait, what? What?
Well, I've been waiting and waiting to give you this present, and considering this might be my last episode because I'm getting fired, I guess this is my last opportunity.
What?
Oh, I wish you'd been with me when I bought this, but I was driving along in the Atherton Tablelands in Queensland in the morning and came across this billboard that said, exotic tropical fruit wines, 250 metres ahead. And sure enough, in the lee of a picturesque ridge lies a small, unpretentious winery, one that pampers its fruit like its own babies. And hello, who is she and how do we get a mouthful of her?
You got me a Herbstreling Springer wine.
I sure did. I got you a bottle of Panama Gold dry mango wine.
It sounds disgusting and I'm so excited to drink it.
It's actually really, really good. And, of course, it said on the sign, open at 9:30 a.m. And I was like, yes, breakfast wine tasting. Thanks very much. So they grow all their own tropical fruits and make their own fruit wines. And I'm drinking some of my own right now.
Oh, I wish I had some.
I'm going to send it to you.
Well, I know that you want to act like you bought that for me quite generously, but I know you bought it just so you could do that little Moira Rose monologue on the podcast. I, meanwhile, have your birthday present from August still sitting at home in my house. I should have brought it today to open it for you on camera.
Take it to Adelaide with you and you can show it to me next week and then we can do a little mail exchange to each other.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Mm. Okay. So was that breaking news?
That was pretty much it. My flute line.
All right.
Care and craftsmanship into every glace. All right. Take it away.
Breaking news. Oh my God, you know what I just realized? We were so excited to be talking to each other after 2 weeks. I didn't even mention what the topic is this week.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, everyone. If you've stuck around, then through us just having a catch up. This week, I am telling you just the gist of the 1976 Chowchilla bus kidnapping.
What?
Here we go again. The 1976 Chowchilla bus kidnapping.
Okay.
Chowchilla is a town.
Okay. Consider me clueless.
Okay. So basically a bus driver and 26 school children were kidnapped at once.
Wow.
I know. So here's the thing. I saw this. It's been on my list for about a year because I saw it on one of those, like, it was probably BuzzFeed or something, like 10 of the most crazy crimes you've never heard of. You know what I mean? And it's like, how is it that 26 children were kidnapped at once and it's not something we've really heard of? Like, but at the time, it was the biggest international news story in the world because these kids just disappeared and everyone was like, it was crazy. But I guess just over time, it's not really, maybe it is big in America, but here I'd never heard of it until I read it on this list. And then a few months ago, I heard the My Favorite Murder Girls talking about it. And I was like, oh, man, I've got to do that one. Mm. And so here it is. We're doing it. Chowchilla, school bus, kidnapping. Are you ready for this?
It sounds like it's going to be so much fun.
Chowchilla, 1976. What's playing on the radio? Disco. A president is president. I don't know enough pertinent details about the 70s to set the scene. It's 15th of July, so it's summer in America. Chowchilla is a little town. It's got less than 5,000 people. I watched this episode of a thing called 48 Hours We Survived or something, and it's where they interviewed a bunch of the who are now adults, a bunch of the kids who were in the bus. They called it a cow town. It was a cow town. Apparently, you know, it was one of those little towns where you could drive through the main strip of the town in less than 30 seconds. One of the women says, "Ain't nobody ever locked their doors." So, like, one of those little towns where everyone felt safe and everyone knew each other. No, it's in the north of California, but because it's, like, so in the country and people do have those kinds of accents, like, or one of the women did, so that's how I'm doing them all.
Okay.
It's funner to do. But they definitely don't sound just regular Californian like you see people in the movies. They sound a bit more country. So, like I said, it's summer, which is the holidays in America, and a bunch of kids who were part of like a, you know, like school holiday care where you like go into school during the day because your parents work or whatever. So a bunch of kids were doing that. And on this particular day, they had an excursion to the local pool. So the bus driver drove them all into the pool. There's kids from ages 5 to 14. And part of what I love about this is that there's like no teachers or anything. And so like, can you imagine today a parent of a 5-year-old kid going, "Oh yeah, that bus driver can drop my kid at the pool and then pick them up 9 hours later."
That was their only adult supervision. They didn't have any other sort of caregiver looking up to the group doing a head count.
Well, there was lifeguards at the pool.
Wow.
I mean, this isn't important to the story. This is just what they did on the day.
Okay.
But yes, this was the 70s,
it's
man.
It's just hard to picture.
It was the 70s. Yeah. It's like Class Action Park. It's just like drop them off and let them go and someone will pick them up and then
hope for the best.
There you go. So this bus driver picks them all up in the morning, and you know in America the bus picks you up pretty much from your house. Like they do pretty comprehensive bus stops over there for school kids. And so they all got picked up. They got dropped at the pool. And then at 4 o'clock, the bus driver was there to pick them up again. So all the kids get on the bus. It's been a really long, hot day. A lot of them are in their swimmers. The bus driver is called Edward Ray. The kids call him Ed. And he's been the school bus driver in Chowchilla for 26 years. So everyone knows him. Everyone loves him. He's driving the kids of other kids he had once driven to school. You know what I mean? They drop a few kids off along the route home, and then all of a sudden they get to this intersection and there's a white van blocking the intersection. And Ed, you know, assumes that they're probably just broken down. So he sort of goes to drive around them, and as he's on the side, he opens the bus door to like say, "Do you need any help? Do you need me to, when I get into town, call a tow truck or something?" And when he opens the door, a guy with pantyhose over his head, which I just think when someone has pantyhose over their head, like that is the freakiest looking, you know what I mean? Blech.
Yeah, the way it distorts their features, yes, like a fetus. Yeah.
Yeah. What? I've thought about that show in detail before.
People show you their ultrasoundy thingies and they're like, "Oh, isn't it so cute?" No, its face is all mushed up against the side of your uterus. It's terrifying.
Do you remember in drama school, our favorite pose to do in photos was the fetus pose? And you and I would both start, like, people would be like, "Pose," and you and I would both go, why did we think that was so funny? And also, why did I just bring it up on a podcast where no one can see what we just did? Trust us, it was hilarious. So this guy with pantyhose over his head storms on the bus, tells Ed, the bus driver, to head down the back of the bus. And there's the cutest bit in the interviews I watched with some of the adult survivors. This guy was like, when the bus driver came down the back, he was 5 years old at the time. And he said, when Ed came down the back, I didn't really know what was going on, but I was just really annoyed because, like, I knew I wasn't allowed to be late home And I remember looking at him and telling him if he didn't get me home on time, my dad would be on him like stink on skunk. So he was like, the kids just didn't really, they were like, what's going on? Who's this guy? But then a second guy with pantyhose over his head gets on the bus and he has a massive double barrel sawn off shotgun. And that's when all the kids are like, I understand that guns are bad. Now I'm scared. Mm. Mm-hmm. And apparently Ed, like, they'd never seen him angry before. He'd always just been like the jovial town school bus driver. And he suddenly looked terrified and just said to them, just shut up, be quiet and do what they say. So the kids saw that he was scared and that like made them think this is serious. Mm-hmm. So the guy with the gun points the gun at all of them and the second guy starts driving the bus away and a third person is in their van and is following the bus in the van. Mm-hmm. And they drive to like basically just this sort of heavy bit of like nature and park the bus, you know, in a place where it's hidden amongst like trees and whatever. And then another van pulls up at the doors of the bus. They open the doors of the bus and the back of the van is like directly where the doors are and they tell all the kids they have to jump from the bus into the back of the van. Mm-hmm. And the van is like super reinforced, soundproofed, no windows. Like it's like getting into just a dark box of nothing.
Yeah.
And so half the kids get into that one. That one fills up. Then another van turns up. So this is like a very organized operation. The other kids get into that van and it's pitch black. There's no food or water. There's no ventilation. And both vans then drive for 12 hours.
Oh.
Yeah. 12 hours. Apparently, like, kids are crying, kids are throwing up because they're getting really sick because it's boiling hot summer. Mm. Like, kids are freaking out. The older kids, the oldest of which, when I say older kids, the oldest was 14. Mm. So the older kids are trying to comfort the younger kids. And then they start, this is so cute, they start singing because they're like, okay, let's, like, sing to keep the little kids, like, feeling good. And do you want to know what song they sung, 1976, one of the most popular songs on radio?
Was it a disco tune?
No.
Jungle Boogie? I don't know.
They sung Love. Love will keep us together. Think of me, babe, whenever. That song.
That's so wholesome.
Girl comes along. That song. So they were singing that. And then they also sung, they started singing, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. But they changed the word happy to sad because they were all sad. Oh. They were being kidnapped after all. So it's like a 12-hour they journey to they don't know where because they're literally in the pitch darkness. They can't see anything. Finally, they stop. And the kids who are in the van with Ed say the door of the van opened, they yank Ed out and then just shut the door. And so nobody knows. They're like, where they took the only adult and the kids are freaking out. Then a few minutes passed, they open the door again, reach in and just grab the closest kid, yank them out, shut the door. And the kids are like, what the F? Like, they're thinking, are we being murdered? Like, what's happening? And that's how they get them all out of the van one by one. Open the door, grab one, shut the door. Open the door, grab one, shut the door. The oldest kid on the bus is a 14-year-old called Mike, and he's sort of trying to comfort everyone in his van. And it gets down to the point where there's just him and a 5-year-old girl in the van, just the two of them left. And he's freaking out because he's like, are they killing them out there? Like, and he's like, so he had to make the decision between getting out of the van first and facing whatever's outside and leaving this little 5-year-old girl in the van alone or making her go first so he would stay in there alone but not knowing if it was a bad thing. Like, and he's talking about it in this, he didn't know what to do. So in the end, he decided it's better if I go out first because I know what's in this van. So I know that whatever's out there, I don't know what it is, but I do know in here. And so he had to she was screaming. He had to tear himself off her because she was being left in this van, pitch black van by herself. He goes out. And when he gets out, he says, all he saw, they were in the middle of like bush, or to them it's woods, and there was a ladder popping up out of the ground that was going down into the ground, and he got sent down this ladder.
Oh.
Yeah, he got sent down this ladder.
Mm-mm.
And 2 minutes later, the girl followed him down. So he was like, oh, thank God. And then down there, they see that they're all down there. So all the 26 kids and Ed, the bus driver, have been sent down this ladder underground into what was kind of like a little kind of bunker almost, but like a really crappily, like it didn't look stable. It didn't look structurally sound. They couldn't really tell what the walls were made out of. They didn't know how dirt wasn't just caving in on them. There was a table with some buckets of water on it. There was a little bit of food. There was really dirty mattresses on like on the floor. And there was a hole into a kind of box that they assumed was like to go to the toilet. And that was it. There was also a fan like sending air into the hole. So they were like, well, at least we're not going to bloody suffocate. Like there was some kind of air coming in.
But still, this is proper horror movie stuff.
That's why I'm like, how have the people not heard? How is this not the most famous story ever?
I do feel like it's probably inspired a couple of things, because there's definitely a South Park episode where this same sort of premise happens, that a bus is somehow derailed and then one by one the kids start going missing. And then Jeepers Creepers is actually a really good movie for the first 45 minutes until they introduce a monster. It's terrifying up until that point because it's a bus that breaks down in the middle of nowhere and then one by one the people start disappearing and you have no idea what's going on. And then, yeah, it's a shame. Spoiler alert, it turns out to be a demon from hell or some bullshit. It's like a man dressed up as Batman.
Demons always ruin the story.
I feel like it's inspired some pop culture things. Well, I know. When things go supernatural and they don't need to, it's so disappointing.
I know. It's always scarier when it's something that could actually get you. Maybe it's more famous in America. Like, I don't know.
Mm.
But then I found it on a list. It was an American list of like crazy crimes it's crazy you've never heard of. So anyway, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there is no demon to spoil the day in this one. It's better.
Good. This is genuinely terrifying so far. Keep going.
So once all the kids are in there, they pull up the ladder. So they're just looking up at this hole and the ladder is pulled out and they just say, we'll be back. And they cover the hole up in the ceiling, which they can't reach without the ladder. Mm-hmm. They cover the hole, which they said they weren't sure what it was, but it sounded really heavy, like it was a bit of cement or something, like something really heavy, like thudded down over the hole. And so they're all like standing in there, and then all of a sudden they hear a truck, and this is where it gets really horrifying. They hear what is clearly the sound of soil and dirt being emptied on top of the hole, like on top of them. So that's when kids and Ed are like, we're being buried alive down here. We're being buried alive. Yeah.
Oh.
Meanwhile, back in Chowchilla, at about 4:30, all the parents were like, hey, where are our kids? Because none of them came home. So the parents at first waited a bit and like they're like, why isn't the bus come? This is really weird. They start calling each other. They're like, is your kid home? No, mine's not. And so soon they figure out that only the first few kids got dropped off. And then they're like, the bus has literally disappeared. 26 kids, a bus and a bus driver. It's just they don't know where it is. So they call the police and the police and the parents sort of go on the bus route and they're looking for it. They can't find it anywhere. And so it immediately becomes a really big story because it's like a school bus full of school children has vanished. Like they don't know what happened. Has it crashed? They have no idea. So they call in the FBI, who send 30 agents because, you know, these are white kids. it's true. Come on, you know it's true.
Yeah.
They take this very seriously. They set up a command center in the town and everyone's looking. And eventually, with an air search, they see the bus where it's been hidden in the woods.
Mm.
So they go there and they see that, like, there's sort of tire tracks around it. So they know that, well, they assume the kids have been taken somewhere in another vehicle or some other vehicles. This is a huge news story. Like, literally the president's commenting on it. Every single news show in the country and the world is talking about it. Everyone's reporting on it. Everyone's like, where are these kids? But there's just no sign of them. They've got this command center, but they're just like, well, what? We're just sitting, they're just waiting for some kind of clue or lead or anything, and there was nothing. Back down in the hole. Oh, have you got a question?
Oh, I was just going to say, it's a nightmare on both sides. It's like the worst thing imaginable, whether you're in the hole or you're one of the parents. I mean, being buried alive is one of the most awful forms of torture you could possibly imagine, and losing your children collectively all at one time and having no idea what's going on.
And imagine, like, when they couldn't find the bus, you'd be horrified, like, they've crashed. They've crashed somewhere. We've got to find them. And then you find the bus and you're relieved to see they haven't crashed, but then you're like, but what the F? Where are they?
And remarkable that they were able to find the bus. It had driven 12 hours in God knows what direction, and they somehow managed
No, the bus hadn't. So the bus drove about...
Oh, that's right.
Like a couple miles out of town, and then the vans drove 12 hours.
Yeah.
But still, So it's just... And of course, 12 hours away, they have no way of knowing... Like, they're never going to find them, you know what I mean? It's just crazy.
Yeah.
So back down in the hole, all the food is gone because by the time they got in the hole, they hadn't eaten in 15, 16 hours. So they ate the food really quickly, but they were trying to ration the water. But it's very hard to ration water when you've got a bunch of 5 and 6-year-olds who are crying and sick and scared. But the water's almost gone. The fan that was sending air into the hole, it's turned off, stopped working. And so they're like, we're gonna suffocate in here. Like, this is bad. And then purely just by chance, one of the kids is kicking the sort of side of the whatever, like the structure is that's holding this hole all together. And when he kicks it, the ceiling caves in a little. And when Ed, the bus driver, and Mike, the oldest kid, see that, they're just like, we're going to die in here anyway. Like, that ceiling is going to cave in. We don't have any air. Like, effort, let's just try and escape. Like, they might be right up there, but you know what? Doing something is better than doing nothing. And so, thinking that the roof could cave in at any minute, they were just like, let's hurry up. So they got all the mattresses that were around the little hole and they stack them up, which gives Mike enough height. He climbs to the top of the mattresses and he reaches the little hatch door in the top that the ladder had been through. But like they suspected, there was like something really heavy on top of it and he's balancing on these mattresses and he's trying to move it. And he's saying like he could barely move it. It was like moving a block of cement. But then all the kids are going like, come on, Mike, come on. Like, and he said it was like, you know, when mothers get superhuman strength and lift cars off babies, like, because cars are always on babies. Cars are always on babies. It's a very common thing for mothers to do that.
Yes.
He got that. And so he just moved this cement thing like half a foot, the tiniest little slit. And he decides to crawl through it because he's like, okay, if I can get out, I can at least see what's out there, go for help. I don't know, just figure something out. Pretty effing brave, like not knowing. They could just be out there with guns, like, but he's like, nah, we're getting out. So he crawls through this tiny slit, and when he's on top of the cement block that is the lid, he finds himself, he's like inside a box. So they've put this kind of box around it. So he kind of punches his way through the box, and all this dirt starts falling through. So obviously they're just under this huge dirt kind of mound. But the kids being interviewed say that as he's punching his way out of the box, like rays of sunshine start coming down into the like bunker hole thing. And so they're all like, yes, like we're going to get out. So Mike gets out of the box, covering the hole, which was also under a mound of dirt. And he looks around and he's just in the middle of the woods, like the bush, and there's no one there. And there's no kidnappers, there's no vans, like nothing. And he said that like the entry to the hole, like that he just punched his way out of the box. When he turned around, it just looked like a little hill of dirt. Like it just, no one would ever have found it. Like it just looked like quite naturally a bit of dirt had built up, and it was just, if he hadn't have punched his way out, nobody would ever have looked twice at that little thing in the woods. And so it kind of, it reminded me of the way it was described. Do you remember when they found Saddam Hussein in that hole underground, and the top of the lid, it was basically just like an esky lid that they'd covered with dirt, and then the soldiers kind of brushed the dirt away, lifted the lid, and he was underground in this thing. It kind of was like that. You don't watch news, so you probably don't remember.
No, but I know the episode of Arrested Development where they sort of recreated that with George Bluth when he was hiding from Lucille.
Yes, it's exactly like that. Like you would never know. Like it was there very well, like disguised. Ed, down the bus driver down in the hole, he starts helping all the kids climb out. And Mike pulls them up. Like Ed lifts them up, and then Mike pulls them out. By the time they all get out of the hole, it's 8 o'clock at night, and they can hear like cars or something in the distance. So they all start walking together, like 26 kids, most of them in their swimmers, and Ed, the bus driver, start walking through the woods towards just what they are hoping is a road or something. Mm. When they finally reach the sounds, it's a quarry, which is like where they do like farming stuff and digging stuff.
They dig rocks out of the ground.
Right,
at a quarry, yes.
It's a big quarry. And they walk up to one of the quarry dudes, and Ed says, "Hi, we're from Chowchilla and we're lost."
Mm.
And of course the quarrymen know who they are because it's the biggest news story in the world, and it's not like there's another bus driver with 26 kids just randomly walking around. So the police rush there, and then they put all the kids on a bus.
Oh,
I know, but how else?
Trigger warning. Oh.
They put all the kids on a bus and they drive them to a local jail because that's kind of the only place with enough sort of space and to put them all in the same place and to interview them or whatever. So they drive them to this jail and they put all the kids into prison jumpsuits because they're like clean and dry. And one of the little kids said later as an adult, she's like, "Oh, are we in trouble?" Like she thought they were in trouble and they were getting sent to jail.
Of course she would.
But what's nuts to me, like there was no parents. Like they drove them to this jail, got them dressed, gave them food and water and everything, but then questioned them for 4 hours before they let them go. And so they finally put them on a bus to drive home to Chowchilla to their families. But get this, even though they drove for 12 hours to get to the hole, they were only 2 hours from Chowchilla. So the kidnappers had just driven around and around and around and around for 12 hours to confuse them.
Wow, so they were still in California?
Yeah, they were only 2 hours from home. Yeah.
Wow.
So by the by the time the kids get home, it's 4 a.m., there's huge crowds, like, you know, 100 reporters, news crews, and you can watch the footage online. It's really nuts. So, like, all these just really shell-shocked kids, these five-year-olds in, like, adult prison jumpsuits, so the arms and legs are folded up, and they're, like, getting off the bus, like, "What is this?" Like, they're just all like, "What's happening?" And the reporters are all yelling their names, and so the kids are like, "What?" And it's very, like, it's crazy footage to watch. And so they finally get to go home to their parents. Back at the hole, when police go and find the hole and dig it up. And when they dig it up, they realize that the kids and Ed had actually been in the back of a moving truck. So the kidnappers had buried an entire moving truck underground and then cut a hole in the top of the truck and had put them in that, in the trailer of the truck.
Wow.
Yeah. And because that would have been an incredibly difficult and noticeable thing to do, and it's the kind of thing that someone who works in a quarry would have the ability to do, to dig that deep underground, and there was a quarry really nearby, they were like, "We think maybe this is someone connected to the quarry." So
what a sleuth job.
I know. So the police go through security footage at the quarry, which I found, I was like, oh, like that's, it's 1976, but I guess they had that. And they notice three dudes digging a big hole with trucks and, you know, what do they call those things on Bob?
I want to say forklift, but that's definitely not right.
What's the tractor thing that digs? Earth mover? Excavator? I don't, anyway, Muhammad would know. Damn it. You know, one of those things that digs dirt out of the ground. So, yeah. You know, they were bloody digging a big hole. It's hard to not notice digging a hole big enough to put a truck in. And then how would they lower the truck? Like, this was obviously people with major equipment and stuff. So they see these three guys on the security footage digging this hole. And one of the guys on the security footage is the very wealthy quarry owner's son, 24-year-old Frederick Newell Woods IV.
Oh, if you don't mind.
So they go to Frederick's mansion, which is not his mansion. It's his dad's mansion because he still lives with daddy. And at the mansion, I swear to God, they find a sheet of paper. We always say that criminals, especially white male straight ones, are the biggest idiots. Mm-hmm. At the mansion, they find a sheet of paper with the word plan written at the top in big block letters. And underneath the word plan was a whole bunch of details about the plan to kidnap a bunch of kids. There was also a ransom note in there. And so obviously they were going to ask for a ransom at some point.
Yeah.
It also had details of the two people who he'd done it with, his very wealthy friends, two brothers called Richard and James Schoenfeld. So the police are like, oh, okay, so we know you did it. But the three of them all ran off before they could be arrested, but they were idiots, so they were all caught within 2 weeks. And that's when they explain the ransom note. And this is where they're even dumber than having a piece of paper with the word plan on it in their house. So the night of the kidnapping, they kept trying to call the Chowchilla Police Department to be like, where are the kidnappers? Give us money. They were asking for $5 million for the return of all the kids. But every time they tried to call the police department, they couldn't get through because the phone was constantly busy with like media calling and parents calling, and it was the biggest news story in the world, so it was constantly engaged. So they couldn't get through to the police department to be like, it's us and we want cash. So they were like, okay, well, let's go to sleep and try again in the morning. And they wake up in the morning, turn on the news, and see that the kids have been found safe and are now back at home in Chowchilla. So literally they went to bed just in another place. Like I'm not going to tell you how to, like, kidnap kids better, but, like, one of you should watch the hole. Like... They literally woke up in the morning, turned on the TV, and were like, oh, shit, they escaped.
Oh, wow, this is white male arrogance at its finest.
White male arrogance. So, James Schoenfeld, one of the rich brothers, said that even though the three of them came from incredibly wealthy families, they had personally gotten into some bad debts that they were too embarrassed to tell their parents about. So they had decided to do the kidnapping. He said, we needed multiple victims to get multiple millions, and we picked children because children are precious. The state would be willing to pay ransom for them, and they don't fight back. They're vulnerable. They will mind. So the three of them just sound like spoiled brats. And also the three of them had been charged with grand theft auto a few years earlier too, but their parents, who were really rich, had managed to get them off on that charge. So they just sound like those kind of rich kids who, like, just have no work ethic, no values, and also want to be cool, like maybe just dip their toe into the world of crime, you know, like just losers.
Disgustingly entitled.
Yes.
That is absolutely foul.
Gross. Parents couldn't really squirm their way out of burying 26 kids alive, though, so they all got sentenced to life in prison, but with the possibility of parole. Richard Schoenfeld was released on parole in 2012 James Schoenfeld, his brother, was released in 2015. Frederick Newell Woods IV is still in prison and he's been denied parole 19 times, mostly because he continues to minimize the crime and refuses to show any remorse. Mm. So, yeah, he's been denied parole 19 times. And a couple other reasons are because he's been caught with porn a bunch and with secret phones. So not only is he not sorry, but he keeps breaking prison rules. But get this, this makes me so mad. Because his family is rich as F, he and his parents are clearly long since dead, he has a trust fund of more than $100 million. He's been caught a few times running businesses from prison through his lawyers. So he has like this very profitable gold mine, a bunch of car dealerships. He's been married 3 times while behind bars and purchased a mansion for his most recent wife to live in that's half an hour from the prison so she can come and visit him all the time. The last time he was denied parole was in October 2019 and his next parole hearing is scheduled for 2024. And if he gets out, then he'll be 72 years old.
Well, I hope he doesn't get out. And what I wish more than anything else is that his wealth continues to grow and that one day it then actually gets dispersed among all the different families.
Well, that's the thing. It already did. In 2016, the 25 surviving kidnapped children settled a lawsuit against him. But because he's so rich, like he had lawyers to kind of like, you know, screw them over. So they did actually get some money, but not a lot. One survivor said it was enough to get some serious therapy, but not enough to buy a house. So he's still rich. They all got a nominal amount of money and that's it. And the kids really
and
did.
And that was 40 years after he'd actually committed the crime.
Yeah,
they a 40-year fight to get money to pay for therapy.
Yeah, so 2016, there was one child had died. So there's 25 kids left and Ed had died as well, the bus driver. So 25 kids got a little bit of cash 40 years later and he's still a multi-millionaire, this guy. It's gross. The kids really did need therapy. A study of them in 1981, so that was 5 years after the kidnapping, showed that they were all suffering from PTSD or at least symptoms of having survived a trauma. They were having panic attacks, flashbacks, nightmares, personality changes, emotional instability. And then when checked on again 25 years later, many of them were still suffering from those symptoms, but it had also grown into more severe depression, anxiety disorder, substance abuse for some of them. They still reported feeling panicked and not realizing they were overreacting when they felt unsafe or triggered. One guy shot a BB gun at a tourist when their car broke down outside his house. Like that's just because they just were still experiencing that kind of trigger from the trauma. Others were still afraid of the dark, even in middle age, which I totally get. I mean, when trauma happens to you at that young age, I've talked about this before, it affects the way your brain develops. And if you don't get serious help and serious therapy and work really hard at getting better, it will just eat you up from inside. I mean, look at me. I still get anxiety. I had to take the week off last week. And so the thing that I think this happened in the 70s, probably therapy and trauma and PTSD, particularly PTSD, was I think still something that they only thought soldiers got. So it was, I don't think a lot of these kids got the therapy they needed. And talking to them as adults, it sounds like they desperately needed it. And a lot of them were only getting it, you know, in midlife, you know, when they were middle-aged. And it had really effed a lot of them up trying to live with it for all that time. So the money for therapy really would have effing helped a lot earlier. You know what I mean? Ugh, so infuriating. Edward Ray, Ed, the bus driver, he received a California Schools Employees Association Award for outstanding community service. Much deserved.
Oh, did he get a little trophy?
Probably. He died in 2012, aged 91, and he, up until the day he died throughout his life, was visited by many of the children who'd been on the bus. He remained close to a lot of them. And now every February 26th in Chowchilla is known as Edward Ray Day.
That's nice.
That's nice. So that's a little nice positive thing to end on. And that is the story of the 1976 Chowchilla bus kidnapping.
That is absolutely nuts. Before we wrap up, do you have any clue? The two guys who ended up out on parole, do you have any idea what became of them or where they landed?
I don't know. I tried looking. I mean, I assume they're both, you know, they're brothers from a very wealthy family, so I assume they're fine.
Right.
They probably just, you know, went back to their money and houses and off they went, I guess.
Which they do not deserve.
I know.
What they did is just one of the cruelest stories I've ever heard.
That's, I mean, I don't think I said, but by the time the kids crawled out of the hole, I think they'd been down there for some, it was like 26 hours or something. The whole thing had been like just awful, like from when they got kidnapped to when they like nuts.
Yeah, horrendous. And how dare they even try to downplay it by saying, oh, it was only 26 hours and no one actually died, because they've inflicted this lifetime of suffering on them with the mental trauma that's going to keep coming back to haunt them probably no matter how much therapy they have. They sound like really vile human beings.
Yeah. And
like you said, it's insane that we haven't heard this story before.
I know, nutso. I mean, and there wasn't even a super amount on it. Like, I got a lot of this from the Wikipedia page, really. And then from there, I found links to a bunch of news stories. And then I watched that 48 hours, like, We Survived episode, which isn't even available in Australia. So you've got to do some wink maneuvering to even wink watch it. And I couldn't find, like, if you want to watch something about it in Australia, it's really hard to find anything. There was a couple things on YouTube, but, like, it's weird that no one's heard of this. This is horrifying. 26 kids were abducted from a school bus and buried alive in a pit.
It truly is nightmarish.
Escaped because the idiot, rich, entitled, arrogant kidnappers fell asleep and didn't check on them. Like, what?
Oh, wow. Mm. Okay, we can write that movie script / musical as well. We'll just add it to the list.
I think there was like a Lifetime movie about it or something, like back in 1991 or like, which I would love to see. But yeah, man, that's it. It's like a pretty cool story to tell just the gist of at a dinner party.
Yeah, no kidding. That was a corker. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, you're welcome. So, we'll put all the extra bits in the show notes and that's it.
Yeah, I can't wait to go and look at some pictures of these people.
The footage is nuts. That's what I want to tell everyone. Like, go and look up just the news footage at the time of all these shell-shocked little kids in these oversized prison jumpsuits, like getting off the bus and just not quite knowing like what's going on. And it's nuts. It's like, I can't even, it's the craziest story.
Oh, the poor little things. All right, that was brilliant.
Thanks.
Worth the wait.
It's been 2 weeks. I feel like I don't know how to end this now. How do we end it again? follow Jacob on Instagram, Jacob William Stanley. Follow me, Rosie Waterland. Follow Just the Gist Podcast at Instagram. Email us. What's the email address again?
justthegistpodcast@gmail.com. And PS, I'm now actually an influenza because I think I told you this story. I was at a waterfall in the Atherton Tablelands in the middle of nowhere, and this couple approached me and said, are you Jacob Stanley? We listened to the podcast, and they'd booked in to go and go scuba diving with Scuba IQ because of the fact that I'd mentioned it.
The power. Wait till you say something bad about a company and then you get in trouble because you got to be careful. The absolute D-grade level of celebrité that you're approaching is where I'm sitting. And it's like just enough for people to get annoyed at you about things all the time, but not enough to get the actual benefits of being a famous person. Yeah. So it's so awesome. You're saying
Jamboree Recreation Park is going to come for me.
No, I swear it's great. I love it. Best place ever. I Dan Brew is awesome, right? Come on.
It is. It yes, is. Okay. For sure. Yeah.
Well, agreed. Yeah. Actually, a girl came up to me on Saturday night when I was out with Em and just said, you know, she loves the podcast and blah, blah, blah. And she was really lovely. And then I said, oh, actually, this is Em. I don't know if you remember, but she's the mysterious co-host from the first episode who then disappeared. And she was like, oh, my God. So even Em's a little bit famous.
Yeehaw.
All right. Love you. And back okay, on track next week. Love. Bye.
Yeehaw. Bye. Listener.